Cobra nighttime action will follow the daytime cards. Watch all the action on TVG or at your favorite satellite facility or ADW provider. The L.A. County Fair meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. 9 days of great racing. Opening day is Saturday, June 25th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a frost, staring at the stars, it doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous. I'm calling the shots, so see you over a bar, it doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races coming up on 20 into hour two, and Casey trying to run down Tony while we do that. And speaking of non-DQs, yesterday wasn't going to be a big pick four payout at Delaware yesterday, but a nice enough job certainly by Seth Merrow. Seth had that ticket that was basically knocked out in the first leg because the winner, the Kelly Dieter English Channel gelding, Borgo by the Sea, it's one of those interferences that happened early in the race, and it just seems so rare that stewards take action either out of the gate, you know, with the idiotic excuse that there was plenty of time for the horse to make up for any difficulties. What are you talking about? I mean, if a horse is interfered with out of the gate and happened to be a horse that that was going to be, let's say, forwardly placed, and the horse gets interfered with in the first couple of jumps, is shuffled back in the field. So suddenly the entire approach to the race of that horse has been compromised. And the stewards say, oh, the horse had the whole mile to make up. No, I'm sorry. That's not the way this works. It's really crazy. And this one happened in the first turn. So And Seth, it wasn't as if Seth waited until later to say anything. He said right away, he said, you know, I just got knocked out. He said, my horse should have been put up, even though that was not the horse. The horse that was interfered with was not the horse that finished second. The horse that finished second was that Ready Reward of Bill Dowling's. But anyhow, the rest of it was pretty formful. The winner was 13-2, and Seth's horse was 6-1. I didn't look for a figure. I'm curious now that I bring this up. I wonder if Delaware sometimes isn't done until a little later in the week. Usually it takes a couple of days, but let's just glance at this. There was a Jerry Robb 2-year-old that won the fourth race by the name of Tappin' Josie. Yeah, no fig. Had been a good second in her debut. She's an Anchor Down, Pennsylvania bred, and owned by Gene Gould Jr., who paid $15,000 for this one at Timonium last fall. So a $15,000 Timonium yearling out of an Afternoon Delights mare, Homemaker, bred by Charles Blandford. This was a pretty, I saw this race, and this was a pretty good performance. Was running away from them late. So, Jerry Robb does such a great job. The rest of that, let's see. There was a maiden winner for Grand Motion and for Stone Farm, homebred of theirs, and Into Mischief, Blame Mare, Assertive. This was a pretty heady bunch, too. For $40,000, Michael Dickinson in here with a Strawbridge runner, Arno Delacour with a Runnymede, and how about Christophe Clement bringing down the Waterville Lake runner, Coldy. These are 3-year-olds. The horse of Delacour, which was Runnymede, Ellen J. Foxwood, and Ketsby Clay. First-time starter, ran okay at a price. But the Hancock homebred, and that mare does not ring a bell with me. I'm curious. Let's see who this might be. Yeah, Blame Mare by the name of Assertive. No, she was winless, actually. Was actually a Hunter Valley. This is notable. Wow. This has got to be a sibling, because wow. Hancock paid $450,000 in 2018 for the mare, and that was in the Keeneland November sale while she was in foal, carrying this baby, as it happens. Yeah, right? 18, so 19, 20, 21, 22. Yeah, this would have been, her name is Seduce. Well, see, now we wait for, while we're waiting for Tony, now I'm interested. See, this is all it takes when you get intrigued by this kind of winner, and you start to look back and see what you're dealing with. Yeah, this is, in addition to this one, and I have no reason to believe that Hancock hasn't, you know, continued to work with her, she followed this baby up with 2 Candy Rides, and the mare has gotten nothing but fillies. She had 3 straight fillies. She was barren for this year. This is interesting. And now let's see the big question, because I got to think she's somebody's sibling. Well, Street Fancy. Street Fancy, who was a Starlet winner, you might remember. That's her half-sister. But boy, 450. And granted, you did get an Into Mischief baby, and now you've got one that's won. So no matter what, you would think that this is a well-bred type that you know, the second dam, and it, yeah, it was a pretty productive going back a couple of generations. Bold Angel, the second dam, a Cat Thief bear that won the Sam Houston Oaks. St. Isabel, who was a St. Liam that was a stake winner out west. And Texas Fever, a Victory Gallop that won the Kentucky Cup Juvenile at Turfway back in 2007. It seems like a nice family. All right. Well, I'm getting a feeling that we may not find Tony. Maybe until later, eh, Case? Is that the way it looks? Yeah? All right. Well, in the meantime, we're just about just a couple ticks more than 10 minutes away from the Ribblesdale. Let's take a look. Let's see if we can't find something, although the problem here is that Kev certainly doesn't, it's a small field, so you're not dealing with many options. Magical Lagoon for Patricia Harrington, 7-2. And Vance's little bit of a price option in here, Mukadama. And of course, when you see those names, it's got to be Shadwell, right? Yeah, it is. Shadwell, a new approach mare, Roger Varian with Jim Crowley. So this is the mile and a half. Ribblesdale, the Group 2, and then the Gold Cup to follow. And Sean Clancy is going to join us after. It looks like I thought we'd lead up to the Ribblesdale, to the Gold Cup with Sean, but he needs to go afterward. So, you know, we'll do, I think, after the Ribblesdale, we can probably get to Brad Cox, all right? That looks like the play. All right. So, quick rundown then, with about 8 minutes to post. History, the Galileo filly that Coolmore, of course, Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore, 5-1. 5-2, Life of Dreams, Godolphin and Appleby. Magical Lagoon, 3-1, Kev's play. Not a bad price. Galileo, Shane Foley aboard, and Mukadama, Varian, Crowley, and Shadwell, 7-1 now, just down a tick. And Mystic Wells, Kitten's Joy, filly, for George Bowie. Ben Curtis rides, 13-1, and then the See the Stars, William Haggis filly on the outside, at least numerically, 6. See Silk Road, who's 8-5. So you've got an 8-5, a 5-2, 3-1, 5-1, 7-1, 13-1. There's your lineup. All right. I guess we're going to have to just play along here until the race, and because I don't want to reach for Brad now. We'll wait till after the race to do it. I can give you some ideas about the sequence in New York. How about that? That's actually a good use of time. All right. And then I will write it up with an eye on the weather. In New York, but I think for now we might be okay. Let's take a peek actually at what's going on at Elmont. Yeah, there is low percentage. I mean, I think you're going to be okay. If it hadn't rained already, I think it looks like you're all right the rest of the way. All right, so let's look at this pick five then. And I have not specifically built the ticket yet, but this is a potentially lucrative sequence. Let me see if Andy, it's 10:30, so there's a chance that Andy has got scratches. I do know that they said to hold the MTOs. And no, they don't. Andy has not sent it out yet. So we'll wait for that. All right. The fifth race starts this pick five. And you're certainly going to start out toward Chad Brown with Microphone, 5-2. It's gotten a little bit of a freshening. This is a horse that broke a maiden at Tampa in January, was second at at Gulfstream, and then came up to New York and ran okay, but was fifth. And now has gotten a little freshening. This is a straightforward mile or 7 furlong turf allowance. This is one of those European imports that Peter Brandt's Microphone, 5-2. Certainly he's got to be respected, but, you know, is far from a certainty. You've got Supply and Demand at 6-1 for Tony Dutrow. This one got back on the grass, and this is actually a horse that they claimed. Tim O'Toole, for $40,000, they claimed from George Abreu and Seth Klarman. And they've done okay with. Won a starter allowance at the end of last year and has now come back to the turf and just missed last time at this level at the beginning of the beginning of May. Supply and Demand, 6-1. And Javier Castellano, who's ridden this horse nicely and feels like a horse that can adjust to different kinds of paces. Just got beat a half length with the return to turf last time. So those two to me, Microphone and Supply and Demand, 8-7, they feel like the A's. Ghost Giant, 8-1, and it owns a race from April. It came back as a 7-year-old for the 7-year-old debut for Rob Attriss. And Ghost Giant, Michael Dubb owns, came back and ran a race that's very competitive in this spot. So happens to be a New York bred that's out of actually looks like he is eligible for second level state bred, but taking a first level allowance open company shot in here, 8-1. That seems far from impossible. And then Dancing Buck, I think you got to just respect a horse that there's a chance that we can take Tony now. Yeah. We can take Tony Case. Yeah, that's fine. Put him on. Dancing Buck is the second choice. This is Michelle Nevin with Joel Rosario. And you look back to a couple of, you know, all the races that have been successful on grass. And Dancing Buck is a fit. But I actually prefer the two prices, the 6-1 and the 8-1 even to Dancing Buck. So I had 8-7-4-2 in that order for the first leg of the pick five. Tony Black, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm sorry I'm a little late getting on. It's graduation day for my son, but it also is graduation day for the high school. And one of the local papers called me. They just wanted to know what I did on my graduation day. And I told them that's the day. Yeah, because we heard some stories. I said, what I did on my graduation day is I rode my first race at Liberty Bell Racetrack. It was June 15th, 1970. He says, yeah, we heard tell of that story. I said, yeah, the horse won. I couldn't believe he won. He paid $106.40, and even more important than that, the name of the horse kind of carried me through my career. It was a horse named Stand By Me, And you know what? It takes a lot of people to stand by you, especially when you're done black, to get you through 40 years of being an everyday rider. So he says, well, we're going to put the article in this Thursday and write about your graduation and what you did. And he said, can you send me that picture? I said, yeah, you know I cherish that picture. It's hanging on my wall, and I'll make sure I send you a copy of Stand By Me, the old horse that I won my first race on.
I love it, and that is funny. I mean that they got wind of that story. That's pretty funny.
Because it's graduation time. In fact, my little boy, he has a graduation ceremony at 1:30, and because he's graduating middle school, RMS Middle School, and then he'll be a freshman next school year. At Haddon Township High School, the same school that I went to and graduated from, even though they made special conditions for me to graduate. They said, as long as I go out for wrestling, I can get to school at 10 o'clock and gallop horses at Garden State and at Old Liberty Bell Racetrack, as long as I get to school by 10 o'clock. And that's what I did. I went to school at 10 o'clock. I galloped horses from 6 o'clock in those days to like 9:30, mucked a couple stalls, and tried to go get a shower before I went to school, because you sure didn't want to go into the school and sit next to your fellow students and smell like horse manure.
Was there anybody else that begs the question, did you know anybody else your age that was on the racetrack at that point?
Well, you know what, at that time I'd been going to the racetrack because I lived a couple miles from Garden State and I'd walk hots. There was a few kids here or there, you know, most of them were youngsters that quit school. You know, and that was my plan in my junior year. I'm quitting school. I'm ready to ride races. And I'll never forget my wrestling coach. Well, I can never forget my father when he started screaming. I can hear him today. But you ain't quitting school. And my wrestling coach said, listen, I'll make it where you can go gallop horses at Garden State. You can come to school at 10 o'clock, but you have to go out for wrestling during the season. I said, no problem. And that's what I did. Miller Preston, I'll never forget. He was a math teacher and a wrestling coach, and I told him quite a few years ago, I said, you taught me more than geometry. He said, I didn't have you for geometry. I had you for algebra. I said, well, algebra and geometry is all about the same to me. It don't make a difference in my career. I said, but you did teach me one thing, Miller. And I always called him the man I know with two last names, Miller Preston. I said, you taught me one thing, Miller. You taught me how not to quit something you're supposed to finish, because I would have never graduated if it wasn't for you. And I said, and you know what? I carried that lesson through my jockeying career. And that's why I lasted 40 years, because I learned from you how not to quit something you're supposed to finish. And at times, you know, being a jockey, there are times in your career that your business is bad, or you're physically, you've hit the ground too many times, and you feel like quitting, and you say, nah, I'm not quitting. I'll quit this when I'm ready, not when I'm going to finish what it. You know, I'm not going to quit something I'm supposed to finish. And I guess that's why I lasted 40 years being an everyday rider.
Yep.
And I guess why that's why the significance of it isn't Benny King or B.B. King's Stand By Me that was significant. Hmm. It was Stand By Me, like I just said to you. It took a lot of people to stand by me to help me last 40 years.
Tony, we're going to listen in to the Ribblesdale from Ascot, and then I want you to talk a little bit. I'm going to pose a couple of questions regarding, and you've ridden some international assignments, so we'll talk afterward about what transpired, in fact, even an hour ago, give or take, in the opener at Royal Ascot, where the Category 1, Category 2 rules kind of come into play as the backdrop about not taking a horse down, even though it was, just an obvious infraction and impeding a horse that ended up fourth, but it didn't look like it was going to win, but we'll see. Anyway, here we go. We're going to take the Ribblesdale and 8-5 on Sea Silk Road. Here we go.
Mukadama and it's Mystic Wells into an early lead. Mystic Wells with Close Up Magical Lagoon just ahead of History in the blue and orange striped cap, and going up out wide for Godolphin is Life of Dreams, and they're followed by Sea Silk Road, and at the back is Mukadama as they run downhill on their way towards Swinley Bottom, covering the first quarter mile, and Mystic Wells out in front under Ben Curtis by maybe 2.5 lengths now to Magical Lagoon. Life of Dreams on the outside, then History locked away under Roy Moore towards the inside, followed by Sea Silk Road, Tom Marquand in that yellow jacket, and finally Mukadama and Jim Crowley. So running into the bottom right hander inside the mile, and out in front still Mystic Wells by a length and a half or so to Life of Dreams. Magical Lagoon a couple of lengths back in third, followed by History on the inside, and still weighted with Sea Silk Road at the rear of the field along with Mukadama. Now they meet the rising ground, and Mystic Wells is just beginning to press on here and kicks into a 4, maybe 5 length lead now over Life of Dreams, but a long way to go and it's uphill all the way. Mystic Wells out in front by 6 or 7 lengths now to Life of Dreams in second. In third, Magical Lagoon, History on the inside, Sea Silk Road and Mukadama, and the jockeys in behind this leader don't really look very worried at the moment. They head on towards the final half mile. Mystic Wells from Life of Dreams, Magical Lagoon, History, Sea Silk Road still weighted with in that yellow jacket, and Mukadama as they now race into the home turn and on their way to the final 3 furlongs. If anything, Mystic Wells has pulled further clear. It's 7 lengths now to Life of Dreams. Magical Lagoon comes under pressure, then Sea Silk Road, followed by History and Mukadama at the back of the field turning for home, and Mystic Wells is now coming right back to the field, who are headed by Life of Dreams with Magical Lagoon. Sea Silk Road back in fourth under a strong drive, and Magical Lagoon just beginning to get on top now from Life on Dreams, but here is Sea Silk Road down the outside joining in under the pumping Tom Marquand. It's Magical Lagoon and Sea Silk Road. Sea Silk Road just doing the better from Magical Lagoon. Mukadama and History in behind them. Up to the line, Magical Lagoon is fighting back on the front and getting back up. Magical Lagoon, Sea Silk Road might just have wavered a little in the run-up towards the line. Tight for third, History on the far side of Mukadama, and then Life of Dreams of Mystic Wells.
Here is the outcome of the third race. First, number 3.
Well, for those that didn't see this, the call did not do justice to Magical Lagoon fighting back, and Shane Foley essentially, I mean, wills him to the line after the favorite confronted him, Tony, and looked like he was going to go right on by, and after maybe 2-3 strides with Sea Silk Road, Magical Lagoon surged again, and so here's a nice, you know, it's just 3-1, but this is a very nice pop for Kev, who had, in terms of his the way he structured his bets, his biggest bet of the day was on Magical Lagoon, a $20 win tab. So this is a big plus and a big hit for Kev, who just keeps, you know, grinding away. Magical Lagoon wins the Ribblesdale for Patricia Harrington. Very nice.
You know what, Steve? It just shows you how horses in a certain position can be, you know, near the lead or on the lead. But as they have a horse closing on them, that spirit of competition kicks in and they dig back in. You know, they give you that little extra burst. As long as, you know, they're fit enough to go that far, and as long as they are relaxing underneath you. You know, part of a horse is, one of his best quality of a horse is one that can run without a lot of restraint from the rider and with a relaxed, composed attitude. You know, the ears pricked, going back and forth, especially if they're on the lead, you know, where they aren't absolutely doing everything they can do to stay where they're at. They're relaxed and composed. And then when you call on them and you kind of throw that cross, bring the reins, a little tension on the reins, wave the stick at them, or a horse comes up on the outside of them and they dig back in again. That's the really gauge of a real true good athlete, an athlete that can give you that second burst when called upon because they haven't utilized themselves inefficiently. They've utilized themselves efficiently and effectively during the entire race. That's a good athlete.
This was quite something. I mean, absolutely looked, I don't know, maybe 100 yards out that the favorite was going to surge past. And very nice effort here. Magical Lagoon, going to be an $8 and change winner. And Kev's got it you know, at least 10 times. And it's been a productive morning already between, and Kev also had the place prices on Deauville Legend and Israr in the King George. And, of course, those of you that have been listening from the beginning, you got on board with Vance Hansen, 44-1 winner that has set off quite a bit of controversy and conversation on the Internet about Category 1 and Category 2 rules. And, Tony, on that topic, I want to ask you, from your international experience, couple of things happened to Errat Ortiz here earlier this week, and one of them was him not being aware that they might leave horses behind the gate. He was looking behind him. He was looking over back over his shoulder at a horse that was refusing to load, and they sprung the latch, and he wasn't ready because he didn't know that they leave horses behind the gate. So yeah, that was a bit of a miscue.
Yeah, you know what? That just shows, you know, not really understanding the way other countries, you know, conduct their business. In the States, it's very rare that you'll see them scratch a horse that's refusing to load. Every once in a while, you might see that. But, you know, it's well announced by the starter. It's well understood by the rider. But you don't see it anyway, and they would never not announce, listen, we can't get this horse in. We're going to scratch him because they're very reluctant to do that. But in other countries, you know what? They put the pressure on the trainer or, that, you know, that's teaching that horse and put daily training him, make sure this horse conducts himself in a professional manner, which means a lot of times, you know, you're schooling him in the morning. You're taking him to the gate. You're trying to get him over this bad habit. I've had, you know, trainers do that, and they really, you know, I can remember Jack Bamberg say, you got to take this horse to the gate. He's not standing right. You're going to him standing right before he runs back. You know, and then I've had other trainers say, I would suggest, hey, you think we can stand this horse a few mornings because he leans back in the gate or he's real reluctant to load? Oh, that just, I've had trainer actually say to me one day, that just makes them worse. Just schooling horses doesn't make them worse. But, you know, there's different philosophies. And sometimes the people understand, you know, they're going to not scratch this horse. They can deal with it. Let the assistant starters and the starter deal with him in the afternoon. And that's sometimes the attitude of some of these guys that, you know, train these horses. And then it's the other attitude that, you know, we'll make this horse stand right. We're going to make him do the right thing, and he's going to be a professional when we lead him over there in the afternoon. And I guess, you know, in different countries in Europe, and I think they don't tolerate a lot of this stuff, and they'll leave a horse standing behind the gate. Now, I guess Irie learned a costly lesson. You know, and he'll understand. You have to be familiar with where you're riding and what the rules are. You know, the other thing that they do in at different racetracks and at different times and in different countries, you know, where you think there would be a disqualification, but they said that, you know, this horse, yeah, he caused some an infraction but and impeded another horse, but it didn't cost that horse a position, and he certainly wasn't going to finish any closer. And they'll say, yeah, you know, we understand it, but we're not going to disqualify the horse because he didn't cost the other horse a forward position, and he definitely wasn't going to get beat by the other horse. You know, you have a horse finishing fourth. He was 5 lengths behind the third horse. The third horse was 3 lengths behind the second horse. The second horse was 4 or 5 lengths behind the winner, and the winner bothered the fourth horse, which never even got up to be third. Well, it didn't cost him a position, and a lot of times stewards, they just take that more into consideration than the book infraction. Oh, well, he came over and wasn't clear. Or he hit his horse twice and he bounced the other horse a little bit as he was going past. They take that into consideration. And what they might do is, you know, they, of course, hopefully they leave the number up. Why cost an owner a position or a win, you know, for something that really was a minor infraction that didn't cost the other horse a position? You know, why cost that owner the money? they might take and say, yeah, we left you up, but you're coming to the movies. We want to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Or if it happens again, it'll be more than just a warning. It'll be a suspension. You know, and they'll explain it to a writer. Most writers know what they did wrong. You know, they might go into the movies and try to cop a plea and say something stupid, you know, which I, as a writer, you know, oh, well, you know what, my horse did come over, but he changed leads at a time and caught me off guard. You know, he changed leads. No, wait a minute. You're steering the son of a gun. He didn't change leads. No, he did change leads. No, you're steering the thing. I'd say it in other language, but, you know, I've heard these stories. I used to sit in the movies and say, like, saying, you know what, shut up. You came over, you knew what you were doing, and you misjudged it. Just shut up. But I guess that's why they never wanted me to be a steward. Because you know, I sat on too many of these some bitches and did some of the stupid things that everybody does on a daily basis. You know, it happens. It's a highly competitive athletic event, and sometimes riders misjudge the thrill of winning and try to make it alleviate the agony of defeat by doing too much,
Tony, talk. You hinted about part of this that I was curious because who was I talking? I was talking to Andy actually yesterday, and we were talking about Arad getting 5 days from the Ascot stewards, and I am curious if whose responsibility? I mean, should your agent be the one that tells you, you know, be aware of these differences? You know, this is what's going to happen. You know, watch out for a circumstance like this. You know, don't worry about what's going on behind you. You know, because they may spring the latch without, you know, with a horse that they leave out of the gate. The other part of it, of course, is when you're riding a straight, it's obviously different than riding on turns, and you know, you don't have the benefit necessarily of the structure of the paths, you know, coming out from the rail or coming out from the hedge. You know, you're out there in space, so you're making your own judgment about holding a line. I mean, there you know, there are some significant differences in the way in which races, especially at a place like an Ascot that has got a round course as well as a straight course. So, you know, 1 mile might be around the turn, and then there's the straight mile. You know, when we haven't run on a straight mile in this country in probably 75 years.
Yeah, you're right. And of course, when you're running something like that, and you're in another country, you're supposed to try to familiarize yourself with what's going on and what, you know, and talk to people. It's really no one's obligation to let you know. In fact, this is a highly competitive sport. You know, maybe Joe Blow ain't going to take you by the arm and say, hey, Iris, you know, this is could happen or that could happen. And sometimes it's not even that. It's just that people take for granted, you know, the rules. You know, you're a jockey, you know the rules. But there are different venues in many different countries, and you know, you get the riding in the States and you think it's all the same all over the world. You know what? It ain't. You know, I only rode in Korea. I always had a chance to go to Africa, Japan, you know, even different places, and I never went. The only time it was near the end of my career, they asked me to go to Korea. And you know, there was someone that was in the administrative officers, because they're the ones who promoted this international race. Japan, Australia, China, Europe. It was like Africa. It was like 6 or 7 different countries, and it was an international team that I was part of. And one of the people in an official position said to me, "You never ridden in Korea." I said, "No, I haven't been any place but in the States." And he says, "Well, the only thing we want to tell you is, you know, when you leave the gate, make sure you don't do any fast move in or out. You stay straight at least for whatever it was, so many yards, 70 yards or 16th mile out of the gate before you want to drop in, before you're going to take out. You know, put yourself in a position where it gives other people plenty of time to react to your different change of position. Make sure you're clear. You know, you use the instrument your whip in a manner that's effective without using it and being abusive. You know, the guy kind of explained it to me. I said, yeah, it sounds like it's good common sense. But, you know, in different countries, like even Arid learned an expensive lesson. You know, when you go in the gate, you better be tied on every second of the time that you're in the gate and not looking around. And, you know, they don't do it the same way. And they maybe aren't going to announce a bottom horse or so-and-so horse. We're having trouble loading. He's scratched. You know, in the States, they would tell you, yeah, so-and-so refusing to load, he's scratched. They might even back everybody out of the gate and reload everybody. Well, other countries, they don't do it like that. You know, they depend, in other countries, the trainer of that horse better make sure that horse comes over and he acts in a professional manner as the jockey acts in a professional manner and does it right from the time he steps on the racetrack to the time he leaves the gate. In the States, you know, they make different allowances for this, and very rarely will you see him leave a horse out of the gate, you know, and scratch him. It has been done before because he refused to load. But I bet you can count the times throughout the country that it's been done on two hands. So I already learned an expensive lesson. Don't take things for granted when you go to another country. Try to familiarize yourself. Try to, if you can't talk to a rider, try to get a racing official to come and talk to you and say, is there anything that I should be aware of that's different than racing in the U.S.? Everybody knows right. What racing in the U.S. is. So, and a racing official, whether he's been in the U.S. or not, would know, oh, yeah, this we do it this way here, or we do it that way here. You know, it's a different game. Don't take another country's rules for granted. Be aware of where you're at and what rules you're going to be riding under.
Well, and speaking of the rules, it didn't take the stewards long. Here's the ruling. 10 days. Paul Hannigan gets 10 days for the interference that he caused in the Norfolk on the Riddler. But those that were aboard the Riddler, including some of our listeners that jumped aboard Vance Hansen's thought, you don't get to sit out 10 days. If you want, you can serve the 10 days along with Paul Hannigan. but there's no time constraint on you spending your winnings. You, whatever you won, you don't have to give anything back.
They left the number up, right? They left the number up.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an example of what I was saying. He didn't probably cause the other horse a more forward place in position, or he didn't cause the other horse a chance to beat him or whatever, or more forward position. Leave the number up. Why penalize the owner? And, you know what? If it's happened and they felt it was really flagrant, you know, give a guy 10 days. And sometime in the U.S., things like that have happened, and they say, listen, this is a warning. Next time, there ain't no warning. It's a suspension. You know, and suspensions, one thing about it, they really do get a rider's attention. You know, it's amazing how your riders, you know, they're out there trying to win. They're a competitive group. But sometimes that spirit of competition can overpower your good judgment. But then, you know what? Stewards make mistakes, too, at times. I'll never forget, there was a horse I rode, and I think it was I know Richie Phillips, he was the National League umpire representative, and I rode horses for him. He was, they took a number down one day at Keystone Racetrack, it was many years ago. And I said, this number should have never come down. And I argued with the stewards. They said, well, the number's down, and you know what, because you're arguing with us, we're going to give you 30 days and a $1,000 fine. And the one steward absolutely didn't like me. He didn't like my uncle. He didn't like me. But anyway, Richie Phillips came and looked at it. He came and represented me. We went to Harrisburg, the commission hearing, and the commission put the number back up, and the days were canceled, and the $1,000 fine was canceled. But stewards make mistakes, too. And I'll never forget the state steward come to me. He says, what did you think of that disqualification? I said, the number should never come down. I can change position out there when I'm clear, and I was well clear. He says, yeah. He said, it was a 2-1 vote. He says, it was 2 to take you down, me to leave you up. I said, well, I'm going to take it on the chin. He says, I wouldn't. I'll never forget Lou Baronella. He says, I wouldn't take it on the chin. I would appeal it. I appealed it, and we won the case. So stewards make mistakes, too.
Oh, that part of it, and we've never really have delved into too much of the politics. I think it's been referred to here and there, you know. But there's also the situation of one steward in the stand having more influence, than the one, the one steward, one vote, Tony, right? There's sort of block voting where, the head steward or the one that directs the action, somebody is going to vote with them no matter what. You get some of that. So you've got one person in the stand basically controlling every decision. And that's a problem. I'm all for the idea that Seth Merrow, years ago, so I give Seth tremendous credit. Maybe 15 years ago, he was talking about this concept, even before the NFL started with the eye in the sky referee system. Seth didn't understand, given the fact that stewards were watching video anyway, why could you not have a central steward board that makes all the decisions? And it's a group of probably a dozen stewards a day, groups of three or even five that are watching, races around the country in a central stand for all intents and purposes. And let a group of stewards that have no ties to that region and to that set of connections and basically be above reproach in terms of those kinds of accusations and influence. There's a lot of merit to that. And it doesn't seem that it's even been considered.
Well, you know, it doesn't seem like it's even being considered. I mean, in other sports, the Major League Baseball, football, they've all come up with this reality that it can be reviewed, and the umpire or the ref that's on the field, just using first sight of what's going on, can be making mistakes. We'll review it, and we can overturn it. And you see that in other sports. And this is where racing at times was caught like in a time warp, where they didn't move on when they should have. That's why we have HISA in place, because we had other organizations that were ineffective and didn't want to make any national rules. That's why racing never even should have been out there advertising in a whole different subject. It's diversity. We're probably one of the most diverse fields of people in the world in any sport. I mean, there's women, there's Asian, there's Spanish, there's Puerto Rican, there's Cuban, there's black, there's white, and we're all out there conducting ourselves in a business that all they really want to judge you on: are you competitive and can you win? If you're a trainer, do you win? Do you run your horse where they belong? If you're a jockey, do you win? If you're a female jockey, do you win? And that's what you're judged on. We go to places and we see Angel Cordero, Georgie Velasquez, Jacinto Vasquez over the years, and they were leading riders at the premier racetracks in the country. Well, they weren't the standard guy, American, white, Anglo-Saxon American. They were Spanish. There's been Asian, Tommy Lee, Deshaun Parker, black, a multitude of women. Why didn't racing ever step forward and say, look at our business, follow what we do? We're a diverse industry. We judge you on your performance, not what color you are or anything. But that's a whole different subject, and I better shut up.
It's funny, Tony. That's an interesting conversation, and there's people that are listening that will agree, and my tendency is to believe that actually we do a better job at that than the industry gets credit for. But there's also plenty of evidence and consternation quiet bigotry and hiring practice, certainly there's sets of those individuals that you just touched on that are not as well represented in certain parts of the business as they they should be. In terms of management ranks and that part of it. I mean, in the places, I think in the places that are merit, that are, you know, performance based, it's hard, you know, it's hard to deny those individuals, no matter what the backgrounds are. You're hard pressed to hold them back. But in the areas where there can be, you know, quiet favoritism and nepotism and, that kind of insidious practice, that still holds sway in a lot of the business.
Yeah, I'm sure, that totally didn't eliminate all that. But we do a pretty good job in so many areas of the business. And nobody ever really gets a chance to look at that part of the business and say, no, you guys do a good job. You know, racing has enough things that they try to put out there that are negative. Let's put some positives out there. And to some degree, that is a positive. But, it's a good industry. It's a good business. And, of course, it has its drawback in some fields and some areas of the business. But it's been good to me. In that case with that disqualification that I was talking about that we had the number put back up, it was a trainer that had turned Stewart that was in the stands. I'm not going to mention anybody's name other than Lou Baronella told me what, he just totally disagreed. And the other Stewart was an elderly gentleman that was near the end of his career, and he was influenced by the Stewart that turned trainer, because that trainer trained for the owner of the racetrack at one point of his career, Peter DePaul. So that's the owner of the track at the time or whatever. I don't know if he owned that, whatever it was. He was very influential in racing. And that trainer that turned Stewart, he didn't have a good liking for me, and that's where it would have been great at one point where they had an impartial body review. And that's what racing needs. It needs an impartial body review some of these decisions. It might make some of the officials come up, making the race official take a little longer. But it hasn't hurt MLB and it hasn't hurt the NFL. It might make overturn the referee or the umpire's decision. But you know what it satisfies in the end? The spectator. Because the spectator's not walking around, man, that guy, what's he, blind? That didn't happen. Or, Jesus Christ, that umpire's always making a mistake. And, the referee's, what the hell's he talking about? You satisfy the public. And that's what the public in this business needs to be satisfied, because they're the ones who support our industry.
Tony, this was, as always, this was always great, and we appreciate it. We'll talk next week, and before we take the mid-season holiday, and congratulations to the little guy's graduation, and we'll look for that. We'll look for that piece. What paper down there?
The retrospect, and it comes out on the once a week paper. The retrospect's on a Thursday.
Nice.
The other thing is, real quick, I wanted to say, I was a little disappointed in the running of the Belmont, because I think riders tried to ride the horses according to the way the horse wants to run, not according to the way the race was setting up. You have to, and I made this statement before the race ever went off. These horses have to be ridden. It's a jockey's race, not a horse race in this particular case. These horses have to be ridden and put in a position where the way the race is setting up, not the way their horse wants to run. But it didn't happen, and I think that explains why we could be disappointed in some of the performances of some of the horses. But that's all a different subject. I beat your ear enough. I vented enough. I'm going to let you go. Keep up the good work, Steve. Thanks for the airtime, and I love you, brother. Take care.
Tony, love you too. Tony Black, everybody. Let's take a break here. We're 10 minutes in. We're 10 minutes out from the Gold Cup. And Sean Clancy is going to join us next. Let's step away, Case. We'll come back. Our last race of the day that we can broadcast. Then, of course, later, you got the Britannia at noon, the Hampton Court, and the Buckingham Palace. A couple of handicaps and a Group 3, the Hampton Court.